Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. You can call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Welcome, Mr. Mayor, on
this snowy
Thursday.
Yeah, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
All right, we're going to start off with some listener questions.
Sure.
So we have, they're housekeeping items, but I'm also going to call them sidewalk keeping items because they're about trash on sidewalks. So first, a listener wanted to pose this question to you and Mayor Dennis. So I asked Mayor Dennis about this last week. So now it's your turn. This is from Jonathan. Mm-hmm. And he writes, when lawmakers began passing smoke-free ordinances and state laws, I don't think much thought was given to what would happen to all those cigarette butts that were previously discarded. If you walk down State Street or Northwestern and West Lafayette or downtown Lafayette, you'll find cigarette butts on sidewalks and streets with larger concentrations around bars, restaurants, tattoo parlors, and even churches. He then says cigarette butts can end up in waterways where they can cause pollution. So his question for both mayors is, what will you do to stop the littering of cigarette butts on city streets and sidewalks?
Well, we appreciate the question. There's only a couple things. Well, first of all, with all due respect to the caller, I'm not sure that's government's job to stop individual people from throwing cigarette butts on the sidewalk. They should know that that's wrong. As a society, we should be raising children and citizens to know that that type of behavior is not appropriate. And again, it's one of those, okay, we want government to take care of it. We want government to fix it, when I think it's a societal issue. It's a community issue. That should just be something you don't do. Government shouldn't have to tell you not to throw trash or litter on the sidewalk or a McDonald's bag out your car window. But with that being said, you know, we have lots of programs in the city. We even started last year, Adopt a Trail, Adopt a Street. And we've had many local businesses do that. They pitch in. So on some of those, they actually help clean up the litter. We do the stuff that we do up at the park. We do downtown now to try to help with this, not in the winter as much, but downtown. We have a downtown facilities person that once a week we go through downtown and we blow all the sidewalks mm-hmm. off and clean all of it off. And then we have the street sweepers come down and clean all of it up. And we're actually even power washing the sidewalks downtown now so many times a summer, just trying to keep them clean, not just from cigarette butts, but just in general. Unfortunately, people throw gum down mm-hmm. and things like that, which, again, I'll be honest, it's difficult to me. Like, there are certain things that government—
It just wouldn't occur to you.
Government shouldn't have to be doing this. This is a thing that people as good citizens, a good people, just don't need to be doing. But we do a lot. Downtown, like I said, we're actually blowing it with blowers, we're street sweeping, and now we're even power washing so many times over the summer, all the sidewalks, trying to keep it cleaned up. And like I said, we started the Adopt a Street, the Adopt a Trail. We do Clean Sweep and all the events that go along with the Clean Sweep program. So I'll be honest, from my standpoint, I think government is doing its part, and we need, as a society, not to litter, not to throw your cigarette butts down. That should just be something people don't do.
Right. I think Mayor Dennis also came down on the side of personal responsibility last week.
Well, yeah, I would agree with him on that.
Okay. Another listener writes, and this is, again, a trash-related question. Mm-hmm. A lot of trash litters the side of 9th Street near the city dump and along the railroad tracks. Who is responsible for cleaning up the unsightly mess? Should the trash company clean up the trash that's not properly secured and falls out of the trucks?
That definitely is an issue there. And it kind of works in a couple different ways. The city limit stops right there as you get to the bridge. So we try to keep it cleaned up kind of up to that point. Sometimes we'll go further towards the trash transfer station. Sometimes we call the trash transfer station. Sometimes the county has road crew and folks do that. So it's kind of a combination of all three of us trying to keep that cleaned up between the city, the county, and the transfer station. Again, I don't know if anybody's listening that's involved in it, but we would prefer people secure your loads properly, tarp your stuff down, you know, because our trash trucks are totally encapsulated. If you look at our trash trucks that do trash and recycling, they're totally encapsulated, right? We don't even have tarp. So we would appreciate the people that would tarp that, because most of that trash is people going back and forth to the trash transfer station that things are blowing out of their vehicle. We'd appreciate people containing it properly, tarping it properly. I know sometimes you can't help it, and we don't mind doing it once in a while, but you're right. It can, the caller is correct, that can get unsightly. And so between the three of us, we try to stay on top of it.
Okay. So we're going to shift topics with this next listener question. And I'm actually going to preface this with a little bit of additional context. This morning, NPR interviewed someone with the Anti-Defamation League because they just released a new report this week. They tracked a 120% increase from 2018 to 2019 in the distribution of white supremacist propaganda, which they're defining as something physical, like a flyer or a poster, something you can actually touch.
Mm-hmm.
And our listener writes, I've lived downtown for years, and I've never seen such an increase in the visible mobilization of white supremacist groups within our community as we have in the last year. So he says on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, someone left KKK recruitment flyers on their block in the Centennial neighborhood downtown.
Mm-hmm.
My family just welcomed our first child, and it's disturbing to me that in the year 2020, my one-month-old child has had this propaganda distributed right to her front door. It would appear that the pay no attention and they'll go away strategy is only emboldening these groups. So he wants to know more, first of all, about the actions the city is taking to condemn and respond to the recent uptick of white supremacist groups within our community. They've heard about Surge showing up for racial justice, getting involved. So first of all, are there other plans to work more closely with that or other similar groups?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's certainly a good question. And I mean, I think I'm not surprised at what the study has shown. I mean, I think if you look over the last 3 years, to be quite honest, the rhetoric in our whole country has changed, and for different reasons, I think these groups feel emboldened, and I think they feel like they can do this now, and there's not as much concern, or there's not as much potential for consequences, and that is, on all levels, deplorable. I mean, it is white supremacy. The KKK is a deplorable part of our society, and it's not welcome here, and it should not be welcome in our country. As far as in our community locally in the past year, past 2 years with some distributed those flyers is absolutely correct. We don't really believe that's an organization. We believe that's the work of one person. And some of our research has shown that person doesn't even have an affiliation, or certainly not in a strong affiliation with an actual white supremacist group, something they seem to be doing more on their own. So, you know, we have talked about this. I've talked about releasing the name of the person.
Right.
After I said that, some law enforcement agencies said, well, Mayor, you don't work for us, but you might want to reconsider that. We're not sure that's a good idea. The person technically has not broken the law, and you're releasing the name. So, you know, we've talked about that. The city attorney sent the information to the Southern Poverty Law Poverty Institute. You know, we spoke with the FBI. It is a difficult decision. It's a difficult situation that's going to need some grassroots effort. So since that last flyer, and even our city attorney got those dumped on the doorstep of his law office after he said, you know, he was going to send that stuff to the institute. So what I've done in the past since that have happened, I've called and just actually today met with in person again folks with from the YWCA, the Stand Against Racism movement, and we're actually formulating a community plan to put together everything from looking at putting up banners, yard signs for people's individual yards, buttons that people can wear, something along the lines of maybe a Stand Against Racism where we do something on the pedestrian bridge, and really try to engage and mobilize the community. You know, we've always said this was wrong, and I understand because I'm respectful of your caller, but there is some thought that every time this ends up in the paper, this individual takes great delight in the publicity they're getting. But I understand we can't do anything. But the reality is, no matter how hard I pound on a desk, that's not going to stop this person from doing that. We need to mobilize the community. We need to get grassroots effort that this is not welcome here, we don't tolerate it here, and that we also begin the processes, again, what I talked about, raising our children, creating that dialogue that it's just not what people do, right? It's like not littering. We don't allow racism here. We're not involved in racism here because we've been raised that way, that we promote that, and it becomes this organic movement because institutional racism is passed on through generations of kids, from grandparents to parents to children, and we have to break that cycle, I believe, if we're going to really make a difference in that question and stopping that type of activity. And we're formulating a plan right now to really enlarge what that Stand Against Racism movement has been able to do, working with a diversity roundtable. They voted here recently to support the Stand Against Racism and the city of Lafayette being involved in that more, and how we can expand that. I plan to talk to Mayor Dennis and Commissioner Murtaugh, hopefully before the week's over, about the meeting I had today and get West Lafayette and the county involved in helping us. And so, you know, we're trying to do some things that's going to be grassroots and organic, and we think that has the greatest chance of, over the long term, making a real difference in our community.
You know, I have also been thinking about and this is a difficult question to answer. How do you find that fine line between we need to draw some awareness to this, that this is happening? This person, for example, is very unhappy that this happened, wants to know why it's happening. But also, are we pouring more gasoline on the fire every single time that we acknowledge that these flyers have been distributed? You know, mm-hmm. Where do we, you know, where do you find that balance between?
Right. And I think it's a fair question. And I think that's why we're trying this organic move. I think if I stand there and pound my desk and I'm all red faced, and I think that is throwing fuel onto the fire. I think that just emboldens them, right? They're like, well, they got under the mayor's skin. And I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is these grassroots efforts where we get people involved, people in the neighborhood involved. We start teaching our children. Like I said, I think those are the answers that over time makes it so uncomfortable for somebody, because they know they're not breaking the law by merely passing them out unless we somehow get them for littering or something, right? You know, they understand the First Amendment rights and their freedom of speech rights. And so I think you'd make it by, it's so uncomfortable here because the whole community is behind it. And I want to even reach out to our businesses. And some of them participated last year, about 60 groups in the Stand Up Against Racism. But I'm hoping maybe we could double or triple that number. And at some point, it gets so uncomfortable that we can really reduce it. I mean, I don't know that we'll ever be able to stop every single person from passing out something at some point, but I think we can reduce it, and I think we can make it better than it is, and that certainly is our goal because it is deplorable. It's not acceptable. We don't want it here under any circumstances. But I think it's going to take that groundswell of people to, you know, like all things that really have changed in this country, right? It's a grassroots effort that helps bring around change.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor this week. Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thanks so much for joining us. You can still call in your questions by dialing 765-496, by emailing ask@wbaa.org, or tweeting a question at WBAA News on Twitter. The city held a climate change town hall at the end of January, and the goals for that meeting were essentially to educate residents about climate change, let them know what the city is planning to do about it, and then to get feedback and possible buy-in from residents. And some of the people I'm hearing, we had a reporter there, asked the city to declare, you know, a climate emergency to start off with. But what other input were you getting from people who came to the meeting?
You know, it was a very good meeting. There was a lot of good suggestions. There was a lot of groups there that were involved, like with solar and some other groups that came that I think can be very helpful as we move through this, because we're taking a really comprehensive approach. I don't want us to end up with just passing a resolution that says we're going to try to be at this point of, you know, carbon neutrality in 50 years. We're going to try to reduce it by 20 or 30% by this year. Again, I want to try to get this to where we have everybody in the community looking at how they can participate, whether it's how often they drive, do they bike more, are there things that they can do with solar at their homes, things that they can do with the stormwater. How do we get a grassroots effort? You know, and the city's already looking at things like putting a solar field at our wastewater treatment plant, looking at cogeneration of methane. I've already talked with the folks at City Hall. You know, we're working, the RFP went out here recently. We need to build a new police station, and we're going to build that across the street from City Hall. And I've already talked about, I want to look at, is there a way to put a solar field on the roof of the new police station? And part of that police station would be ran with solar energy. And so we're looking at, but how do we engage our businesses, and how do we engage each citizen? You know, we have a rain barrel program, you know, little things like that when it comes to looking at climate change and protecting our natural resources and just being good stewards of our environment. So I want to look at a lot of things like that. So Iris O'Donnell, who's helping us, she sent me some things of what she kind of thinks the next step should be. My staff is looking at what they think they should be. We're going to try to marriage those two. And I'd like to hold at least one more public meeting, if not two, before we really get started on what's called the they come in and they do an analysis for us, like they did in West Lafayette, kind of give us an idea of what our carbon footprint is. It's through a school down at IU, a program that they have down there. So that would be one of the next things, is to meet with that group to try to get the interns up here to do that work that needs to be done. So those are kind of what I see being the next step. I've told everybody, I know everybody wants this quick, but if it's quick, it's probably not going to be right. My goal is to really methodically do this, come up with an action plan and things that we can do, you know, over the next year, and by the end of the year, have a plan, or at least a good outline of a plan, and taking that resolution to City Council.
You're also asking people to complete a survey, which can be found on the city website, and that asks questions like, what do you see as the best approach for Lafayette to reduce greenhouse gas emissions? And also, as you were saying, what barriers have you encountered in your personal life to reduce your carbon footprint? How many people have taken that survey? Do you know what kind of responses
you know,
you've been getting?
I don't want to guess. I don't know off the top of my head how many people have taken that at this point, but we're going to leave that up for a while, and we want to encourage people to do that, because we are looking at also working to put together a steering committee. And I think from the enthusiasm at the meeting, we're going to have people that are being willing to do that. And some people that couldn't come to the meeting have emailed and said they're willing to take a leadership role in some of this. And so we're looking at also at putting together a steering committee. So, you know, we really are still in the very early infant stages here, and that's what I said. I don't want to hurry it, and I also understand that it's, you know, like the Stand Up to Racism. Those are very important issues, and so we are working on them, but we want to lay out a plan. We want to make sure we're doing it right, and we do have limited staff, so we have to get all the other stuff done every day, like pick up the trash, plow the snow, and all the projects we're working on downtown and different things. And so, but I feel really good about both of those issues. They're important to people in the community, and I feel like we've started to bring in the right people to work with us. Not, I don't want to say work for us, right? Work with us. This needs to be a collaborative community approach. At the end of the day, we shouldn't say that the Lafayette City government came up with a resolution. It should be the community of Lafayette came up with a resolution and a action plan that we're putting in that's going to impact and all of us can participate in.
Another topic we discussed with Mayor Dennis last week, and which you and I will now touch upon, the 2020 census. So what is Lafayette doing to ensure a successful headcount?
Yeah, you know, we're working with West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County. We have the census committee. Cindy Murray is heading that up for us in the city of Lafayette. She's been out talking to every group that she can talk to. We're going to continue that that effort, working with all of our census partners. We just, Mayor Dennis talked about it yesterday at the end of his presentation at Greater Lafayette Commerce. We have been pounding the pavement with businesses, different groups, different organizations, trying to get them activated because obviously the census doesn't really give you a budget to do all this. In fact, they're not even passing out swag like they did last time.
Swag, but okay.
You know,
okay.
And that's okay. That's probably not necessary and might not be the best use of the money. But again, it's one of those things where we really need everybody's help. We need all the businesses to talk to their employee. We can't get to every business in Lafayette, and we can't get to every house. We're going to be putting, you know, things out in our utility bills and some of those things too. But we need everybody's help in spreading the word. Know that it's kept private. We, you know, we need our children counted. We want people of various backgrounds and immigration to get counted. We need everybody to get counted. And so I appreciate you asking about it because we really do need to spread that word. And again, we can't do it all. We don't have some huge budget to run a bunch of TV commercials and things like that, but we're going to try to do what we can to do. And we just need everybody's help.
Last week, the Lafayette Police Department released some detailed information about an officer-involved shooting that took place, something the department kind of essentially has decreed was a suicide by cop. And apparently there were passersby as things were unfolding, and it unfolded, it looks like, very quickly. So there were significant decisions that officers were having to make in kind of a brief and intense period of time. I wanted to know if you could talk about the training that a police officer would be undergoing to kind of de-escalate that type of situation, you know, as opposed to other types of police training.
Sure. I mean, you know, we have, first of all, the officers, it's a very sad situation, and my heart goes out to the family of the victim. We know that's never easy. And the last thing that a police officer wants to do is take another life. I mean, I can absolutely tell you that from my 21 years on the Lafayette Police Department. And, we go through a lot of training that deal with making those types of decisions because they do have to be done quickly. This situation, and actually the officers tried to talk to the individual for almost 11 minutes. So it really wasn't a split second decision then to take the shot after the individual raised the gun again. But as you said, many passerbys talked about the great restraint of the police officers that were used. In fact, one of the witnesses said they were surprised that the officers didn't shoot sooner than they did. But we have officers that are trained in mental health. We have hostage negotiators and different types of negotiators. If we can get them there in time, they weren't able to get there on this one. But the officers go through extensive training from how to use lethal force to non-lethal force, to negotiating, to talking to individuals. If you listen to some of the tapes, you heard the first thing the commander did was working on getting less lethal beanbag rounds, making sure somebody had one, double checking to see if a taser round might be. I mean, the first thought they went to was, how do we not have to use deadly force on this individual? And that's always the route that we want to take. But then again, the officers must protect their lives and the lives of other citizens and people. That street, you know, if you looked at the video, lots of cars got through there, and I'm sure people asked some questions. But if you know that area, even if you block it off at 18th Street and you block it off at up at Earl Avenue, 23rd Street, 21st Street, 20th Street, all of those streets intersect with State Street. And so you got to get a lot of cars there to block off every single road that touches that and have enough people to create a containment. And in a short period of time, they did a fantastic job with that situation.
The Lafayette Theater is now officially being run by the city. So yes. What can you tell us about how that's going and how programming is being handled?
You know,
right
first of all, thank you to the Long Center and their board. As you know, the Long Center is now operating the Lafayette Theater, just like they do the Long Center for the city of Lafayette. We own both of those buildings. It's going very well. It was a real challenge once we first got it. We went in there, we hauled out five tons of trash out of that building.
We're talking about a lot about trash on the show today.
A lot of, yes. And took a lot for us to get it clean, just cleaned, and then began working on getting all the carpet scrubbed and all the gum up and all the different things. We got it decent. We got some painting done in time for the Bubble Bonanza, the first show down there. Over 400 people. It was a sellout. People seemed to really enjoy it. We got the bathrooms cleaned up decent. So that was a big first step for us. Now that we did that show, we're taking a little bit of break between now and April.
Okay.
We're going to try to paint the rest of the facility, the big tall walls. We got the kind of low stuff painted. Mm. We only had from January 8th to like January 21st for that to do what we did just to get it clean. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to paint all the walls. We're going to do some other work in the bathroom. We're going to do some other work with some of the mechanical stuff to try to get it just better than it is. We're going to work on some of the acoustics that we can do very inexpensively real quick. And then that we're hoping that will get us through the next year. We're working now with Keystone Architecture and Kettle Hut Construction. They're going through there and doing all the work to come up with the master plan of, right, here's everything you need to do to make this a multi-use facility. My guess is it'll be around $2 million by the time all their recommendations are done. So we're going to spend a small amount of money now that will buy us to get us through the next year, maybe past that a little bit, so we can still have great shows, fun things like we did. The acoustics will be decent. People can rent it out for weddings, different events. We can have different shows there. We're coordinating the programming with the Long Center, so things that aren't a good fit for the Long Center, we moved to Lafayette, different things like that, and really try to activate that space. People will notice by April, people will even notice a bigger difference than what if they came to the Bubble Bonanza. They will see, and people love that. I mean,
Bubble Bonanza.
Yeah, it was sponsored. IU Health sponsored that for us, and it was people. The guy blew giant bubbles so big you could stand in them, and he'd put them around you. And
that's wild.
You'll have to look at the video at some point. But families loved it. We're working on programming. We're very excited about all that, and we think it's going to be another wonderful addition to downtown and our arts and entertainment.
Okay. One more quick thing with our final seconds here. You're now accepting proposals for the use of Loeb Stadium. Is that another space you're thinking about for a multi-use purpose? What do you want to see going on there?
Absolutely. I've talked about that from the beginning. You know, we're going to work to get a baseball team there. We want to do concerts. It's being wired for concerts. We can have soccer. We can play football. We can have movie nights. We want that to be a multi-use facility. We call it Long, Loeb, and Lafayette. And between the three of them, we're going to do a lot of neat things.
All right, that's our time for today. Thanks so much, Mayor. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us all of your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for listening to the program and have a wonderful rest of your afternoon.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.